Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. You can watch today's show by going to Ustream channel and just searching for Gary Null. And we have people all over the world who are watching. And today we're going to talk about the latest information on how a simple grain, an old grain, barley, it's been around a long time, can help you with the bad cholesterol. Now, most people have an excess of the what is called low-density lipoprotein, or the bad cholesterol. Barley can help. Rosemary can also help improve brain function, especially if you've had any trauma to the brain. Also, regular exercise protects against cognitive decline, especially if you get older, University of Melbourne. Also, from University of Rhode Island, more on how pomegranate, an under-consumed fruit in the United States, can help you if you have aging brain, and how from the Indian Council on Medical Research, antioxidant therapy and the polyphenols could reverse endothelial dysfunction in diabetes. That means the lining of your arteries. Also today, we're going to look at superbugs, how they can kill more people than cancer. Wow, how did that happen? And what can we do to protect ourselves? And also, if you want to live in some of the more important cities as far as development goes, how much does it cost? Recently, I helped someone who wanted to come to work in our office be able to afford to live in New York City. I gave him clues on how to do it. You'll be amazed at how much it costs you to live in 10 major cities. I'll go through the cities. Now, this is not living extravagantly. This is just normal living. How much you got to earn each year to do that. Also today, we're going to continue exploring some of the background on Hillary Clinton, especially after her claiming and the media supporting her in that claim that she's got the nomination wrapped up. And on the one hand, you have a lot of women saying, isn't it great that a woman was could be president? And I'm saying, did you forget about what happened when we thought it would be great for a man of color to be president? And look at the results. Why are we looking for someone based upon their ethnicity or their gender? Why not simply look who is best qualified to solve the problems we face in America and throughout the world, from income inequality to corporate pollution to crimes against humanity? Isn't that more important? It would seem it should be. Abby Martin continues to explore why Hillary Clinton is not the candidate of choice. Also, proof that so much of the news is manufactured. You're going to hear every single one of these news outlets all across America using the same identical words. How's that possible? It's simple. A PR firm gave them the information and they're simply parroting it. So this is something innocuous, has to deal with the weather. But what if it was about get your vaccines, they work? Or what if it's about vitamins don't help you, they just create expensive urine? Or herbs are best left in the ground, they don't make an impact upon your health. You see, it depends upon what message is being conveyed and how willing the media is to comply with that message without looking for the truth. Also, with Israeli settlements expanding in the occupied West Bank, 500,000 Israelis live in over 100 settlements built on Palestinian land. Well, the government of Israel said it has a right to build these settlements, and the rest of the world disagrees. So my concern is I want to see peace for both the Israelis, and I want to see peace for the Palestinians. I believe that both groups of people deserve to live in harmony. So we're going to explore this, because right now we don't have that harmony. So we try to tackle all the issues that are important, as many as we can in a given day. We always start with health, because everybody wants to live a longer and healthier life, right? Barley. Most people know barley from barley mushroom soup, and that's good. But also barley is a good cereal in the morning. The barley that is the organic barley, and you don't really need to cook it. It's like millet. You can put some hot water on it, put a towel on it, or put a lid on it, come back about 20 minutes later, and it's softened up the outside shell, the fiber, and the fiber is really good for your intestines, and it sweeps out a lot of carcinogens and toxins, and then the nutrients in the barley are good, and it's very neutral in taste. Has a lightly nutty, almondy taste to it. So I like to use it in salads. I can put it in a cold salad. People never think about a grain salad. You should. Grains and beans together make a very high-quality, complete protein. They're both complete, meaning they both have all 8 essential amino acids. Essential meaning our body won't create those amino acids. We have to get them from exogenous or outside sources. So we bring those in when we eat a bean, navy bean, lima bean, kidney bean, soybean, a lentil, or we get them when we have grains, brown rice, barley, millet, spelt, amaranth, quinoa, rye. Those are grains. Combining the two, you get even a higher quality protein. So putting them in a salad is terrific. You simply have some brown rice, and generally best to season your rice. I like to mix my brown rice with some broccoli, and corn, peas, nice seasoning, and then you put that, when it's cold, in, let's say you can stuff it into a tomato and put a nice sauce over it. Put that in the middle of a salad. Makes a beautiful presentation. But you can also do the same thing with barley. You can use it. Now, this is the latest on barley. This is from St. Michael's Hospital. An article published on this in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Eating barley or foods containing barley's significant nutrients reduce the level of 2 types of bad cholesterol. According to the cardiovascular risk factors, it lowered your risk of having a heart attack, and that's important. And it's the first study to look at the effects of barley and barley products on the LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, and it lowered it. Quote, "The findings are most important for populations at a high risk of cardiovascular disease, such as type 2 diabetics." So if you want to help prevent a heart attack, you want to help with diabetes, have some barley. Now, rosemary is an herb almost exclusively used as a seasoning. But according to a Kunming Medical University in China, rosemary extract, which is easy to get, you can get it in any health food store, can improve brain trauma-induced cognitive deficits. So a lot of people have brain trauma. Think of this. Think of all the soccer players. Because every time that ball is hit on the head, that creates a minor trauma. Think of all the football players and other players. They create trauma. Wrestlers, trauma. And just the things that happen in life that can cause trauma. Well, rosemary can help, especially if it's mild trauma. And it says, quote, "Despite the high incidence and serious consequences of cognitive deficits following mild traumatic brain injury, effective therapeutic drugs are limited. But this study showed that rosemary, dissolved in 1% extract, meaning a very small amount, was able to make a difference." So let's just look at the movie Concussion with Will Smith. Good movie, great performance. But it showed about the untold story that for decades, football players were ending up getting concussions and then eventually retiring. Most, I think, it's an average of 7 years. And then later ending up with brain cancers, brain trauma, Alzheimer's, memory loss, inability to function. And National League Football took no credit for it. They wanted to go away. They wanted to hide it. This man, through his determination, brought it to our attention. Well, that is how it starts. And if those people would have known we can rebuild damaged brain, we could do things like hyperbaric oxygen therapy. That helps brain trauma. Acetyl-L-carnitine, that's very important. Glycerol phosphocholine, that's important. Ginkgo biloba. We could also use a combination of coenzyme Q10 and alpha-lipoic acid, the R fraction. That helps as well. There's a magnesium that also will go into the brain and help. These all help reduce trauma in the brain, damage in the brain, any form of these adverse reactions in the brain that build up these amyloid plaques. So now add rosemary to that. Regular exercise protects against cognitive decline, and this is from the University of Melbourne. I'll read it. It says, regular exercise in middle age, that would be from 40 to, let's say, 40 to 50, is the best lifestyle change a person can make to prevent cognitive decline in later years. This was a 20-year study, and it was called the Women's Healthy Aging Project, and that's what they found, that exercise, diet was also important, marital status, employment status, number of children, mood, physical activity, all those were measured, and they're all factors. A woman's hormone levels, cholesterol, weight, body weight, all that's important, blood pressure. But it was the amount of exercise that was the single most important determining factor, the exercise. Now, my personal experience. I just ran into someone the other day who was one of the researchers at the Institute of Applied Biology. I hadn't met anyone in the 10 years since I finished working there. I've been there for a long time. I was a research fellow. I had my own department, had a whole floor. I was the only person there doing anti-aging research. And what I found was that the more exercise that anyone engages in on a regular basis, the healthier their overall body. In fact, the older a person gets, the more consistent they should become in their exercise. Now, that's just the opposite of everything that I learned growing up. When I grew up, I noticed as a kid that everyone that I knew, family and friends and their families, once they hit 35 or 40, they were considered old because no one exercised ever. And then by the time they hit 60, if they were still alive, and anyone who died in their 60s, we were told they had a good long life. They almost always were overweight, pot-bellied, had diabetes, high blood pressure, almost always. Generally, we didn't see cognitive decline. You would have had to have lived longer for that to have occurred. But for those who didn't smoke and didn't drink, the one factor that let them live a long life is they were physically active. But everywhere you look, people were told to sit, take it easy, you know, stay in bed. Just the absolutely wrong information. So when I started to travel around the world and I wanted to see down in the rainforest, I hear there are people down there in their 60s and 70s climbing trees. I mean, just scampering right up that tree with little more than their hands and their feet and their agility. I saw it with my own eyes. We saw nothing like that in the United States. Nothing. I heard that there were people living in the mountains of Italy and in France and in Spain that were living much longer lives than their own family members who had migrated to the cities or suburbs like Milan or Naples or Florence or Rome. and they were living longer. Why? No one knew. So I went. And I spent weeks working with and spending days with people living in the mountains, and it was a completely different lifestyle. But the one thing you notice, they had really powerful bodies because all day long they're farming, they're working. Those muscles don't stop. They did everything for themselves. I never will forget this. I was spending 2 weeks with a group of friends of mine who are Italian and speak fluent Italian. And so therefore they were translating. And a typical farm is up and down, up and down, up and down. There's no flat fields. There's no rolling pastures, not in the Alps. Very extreme elevations. And elevations that an American farmer would never farm. It's just too steep. Because we're used to getting machines in, a tractor, a lawnmower. No, they don't do it there. They do it all by hand. So here I go out, and I'm going to work with this older man, and he is 88 years old, and he's got thighs and calves like a football tackle. And he's walking up and down this hill, and he's got row after row after row of string beans and tomatoes and squash that are growing. And he's tending them, and this is a very steep hill. And he must have 15 acres all under plant. And he goes out every day. He weeds it himself. And you spend a half hour going up these hills. You feel your abs are tight, your back. And now you know they do it every day. And he says that his family that still lives there, and he and his wife, and their children, they never get colds, never get flu. Every day they take different ointments to prevent themselves. Like they'll take cauliflower oil every day and black currant concentrate. They have all these concentrates in these jars. They have all these fermented foods. You talk about probiotics. Wow, they've got a ton of different sources. They have all these mushrooms growing on all these logs that they go out and harvest the day they're going to consume them. A lot of stuff is done fresh. Their pastas are fresh. And then they look at their sons and daughters, who they tell us in the cities are sick all the time. They don't exercise on a regular basis. They don't breathe clean air. They're eating too quickly. They're very stressed. And these people, it gave me, and I found it the same in every country. In Jamaica, in the Blue Mountains, in Trinidad, in Bermuda, in Venezuela, all the places I have gone, Dominican Republic, to study the cultures, to be with the people, those that live close to the earth, those who live in the country, those who eat natural, clean foods, those who have clean water, those who are physically active live the longest, healthiest lives. And that's why I believe that the gated community phenomena in America and the suburban community phenomena that's been popular since the gated community since the 90s, and now we have dozens and dozens of gated communities per community. So like down in where I live, in my winter home in Florida, when I moved down there 20 years ago, there were maybe 10. Now there's 70. And some of them have 5,000 people. What do they do? Golf is not exercise. You know, that's... It may be very skilled and take a lot of talent to do it, but and that I don't doubt. But no, you're not going to get in shape golfing. You've got to be doing something regularly and daily. So let's get up and exercise to live a longer life. And you shouldn't be sitting more than 3 hours a day. So get up. Even get a desk that is like a Thomas Wolfe desk, the great writer. Get a desk that you stand at and see, move your legs. Move those legs. And from University of Rhode Island, published in the journal Chemical Neuroscience, they found, quote, scientists have discovered more about how pomegranates may shield us from Alzheimer's disease. Bacteria in our gut may be the key to the fruit's protective powers. Yet another revelation about the vital gut-brain axis. In Alzheimer's disease, by the way, most of you know that we have what are called amyloid. These are proteins. and they form clumps, and that's a bad thing. Just like the clumps that your arteries would form that cause your blood to, let's say, be clotted. You hit a bunch of those clumps and you aggregate and you end up with clot. Anyhow, to fight the clumping, a compound needs to have molecules that can cross the blood-brain barrier to do their work. And previous research showed that pomegranate extract had anti-Alzheimer's effects, but didn't identify the compounds that made it through the barrier. Scientists designed the recent study to try to determine which compounds in the pomegranate are actually passing the blood-brain barrier. And what they found was that they isolated and identified 21 compounds, mostly polyphenols. That's your blueberries. That's your cherries. All right? That's your wonderful noni. Those are these wonderful fruits that we're talking about. From pomegranate extract. And what they found was that the polyphenols cannot cross the blood-brain barrier. However, a compound that's formed when a certain type of pomegranate polyphenol is metabolized by bacteria in your gut can. And it's called urolithins, U-R-O-L-I-T-H-I-N-S. And they can cross the blood-brain barrier, and they can reduce the protein clumping, and that is how that's important. And by the way, walnuts, also cultivated for thousands of years, may also be neuroprotective. A study published just, and you haven't heard about this because it's just brand new, Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, suggests that nuts may delay the onset and slow progression and prevent Alzheimer's disease. So that's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Got a lot more to share. Please stay with us.
I only meant to love you. Didn't you know it, babe? Didn't you know it? Why couldn't you be content with the love I gave? Oh, yeah. I gave you my heart.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm going to take a moment and play two back-to-back audio clips that I think are very important to what we're facing today. I believe that we are not putting the most important and relevant social issues front and center. Instead, we're doing secondary ones. Not that they don't have significance, but think of all the time and energy that we're putting into, let's say, a non-essential issue, and we're not touching global warming. We're not discussing how we can stop disease, how we can reduce obesity in women. And today there was a front page issue of 40% of all, every woman, 40% of all women in America are now obese, not just overweight, obese. If we put into that equation overweight, we're up to 70%. With that comes heart disease, diabetes, cancer, depression. That should be our emphasis. These are life and death matters. Why aren't we discussing them? Why haven't we made them essential? Also, we should keep into our mindset that this government, as well as the last, let's say, 40 years, is a rogue state. They're not doing what they're mandated to do to serve the public interest. Instead, they've taken upon themselves to view we, the public, as somehow domestic terrorists. That anyone who speaks out, stands up, steps forward and says, either this corporation or these products are damaging to our health. Why aren't our federal agencies that are receiving billions of dollars, why aren't they stopping it? Why is almost everything that's bad found out by individuals within the body of the community and not in federal agencies? We, the public, have determined that vaccines are neither safe nor effective. We, as scientists and physicians, have looked at tens of thousands of hours of research collectively and found that there is no science, then why didn't the agencies that were mandated to protect us, like the FDA and the CDC, we determine that the drugs are dangerous, like Vioxx, that killed between 60 to 500,000 people. Why didn't the FDA? The FDA was not on that. We were. Why have we found out that the high fructose corn syrup is dangerous and got people to stop using it, and the soft drinks and the caffeinated beverages and the cell phones causing cancer? We, the people, we who are activists, are showing the danger of fluoride in our water supply and all of the chemicals that go into our body, and using microwave ovens to heat your food. The government's not telling us this. We're determining that our water is not safe to drink. We have determined that we should be using our filtered water because of chemicals that going through people's body, go out through their body and are expelled into water and get into our bodies. I don't want chemotherapy. I don't want AIDS drugs. I don't want heart drugs. I don't want psychiatric drugs in parts per billion in my body because I did not know that my tap water was polluted. All tap water in America is polluted. All tap water has some form of contamination. Our government's not protecting us. I want to know about the outgassing in carpets and furniture, but I'm not finding that from my government. I'm finding it from consumers who are concerned, like a Rachel Carson, who raised the specter of DDT being dangerous. But the government didn't. They fought it. Now we have the government protecting the tobacco industry for 100 years, protecting the auto industry, protecting the big polluters, protecting the Koch brothers and others. I don't want to know that. Not that I don't want to know. I want to know, but I'm concerned that I have to find out that our savings can be confiscated. All the money you have in the bank, including your safety deposit box, can be confiscated as what's called a bail-in. But who told us that? Professor Ellen Brown, the great constitutional lawyer, told us. The government did not, but it was verified. And then I look at that Snowden, who told us about how much corruption was going on by being spied upon. The government didn't tell us. And that they were torturing people. The government didn't tell us. They denied it. They lied. And they were starting wars and regime change. The government didn't tell us the truth ever. We had to find out about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. We had to find out all these things, why we really went into Libya. It was because Gaddafi, who was the most advanced of the leaders of any country in Africa, unlike Nigeria, the most corrupt country in Africa and the most populous, over 85 million people, the money doesn't go from oil except to a tiny group of individuals. Gaddafi, every barrel of oil that was sold went into accounts of every single citizen. They shared in the profits. And they had the best educational system, the best medical system. There was no poverty. There was no crime. They fought terrorism. There was no terrorism in Libya. But he made a mistake. He wanted to make all of the African nations aware they could join together and have their own gold denier to back up all of their trades. What would that have done to the dollar? It would have no longer made it the reserve currency and the power of the dollar. And he had a lot of gold to back that up. That's why we went in, but we didn't find that out from the government. So you see, when we're relying upon our government or their agents, Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are agents of the government. They speak for Wall Street. They speak for Big Pharma. They speak for insurance industries. They don't speak for us, and yet people act as if because she's a woman, that's special. No, it's not. We should never elect someone to office because they are a particular race. We should elect them because they are the best person possible to solve the problems without prejudicing a person who is not like them. We should actually think as radical of thought should be, that maybe it's time for someone who has some spiritual, ethical, and moral values. And yet we have vote for people who have none, zero. They're sociopaths. These are really sick people. And the more extreme they become in their pronouncements, the more radicalized becomes their projection of who they're going to include and exclude in their power mongering, the more they galvanize people. What has become of us? So we're going to take one example of this, just one. I've been talking about the danger of America now, full, no excuses used. We are a police state, and we are also a fascistic state. Even the notion of what we were told was inverted totalitarianism exists. Years ago, I told you that when the government begins to seize assets without due process, then you realize fascism is here. It's a form of totalitarianism. I'm going to give you two examples of how this is not just going on now. It is rampant. But there's an irony. The irony is one of the people, it's a news story, just a regular news story, but now they've got it to where they've got a machine, and they take a little handheld machine, and they can say, give me your credit card. So you're driving a car, you pull over, and they take every one of your credit cards, stick the credit card in, and withdraw every penny you've got in the bank. Would you consider that normal? They don't charge you with any crime. They say, go on your way. But, sir, you just took all my money, every penny I have. That's correct. But that's not right. Well, it is right from our point of view. Listen to the story. Then, who caused this to happen? You're going to hear from the man in the Reagan administration who caused this to happen, and now he's fighting to stop it, and we'll hear from him. Two stories back to back.
This is News 9's Aaron Brillback. Well, you've probably heard of civil asset forfeiture. That's where police can seize your items and your property without proving that you've committed any kind of a crime. Well, now police in Oklahoma are upping the ante a little bit. The State Patrol has bought so-called eRAD readers. What those do is they allow police to scan any cards that are in your pocket or your wallet, cards including your bank cards, any type of gift cards, find out how much money is on there and seize that money unless you can give them some good reason as to why you have it. We'll have more details coming up at 6 o'clock.
In September of 2010, Stephen Skinner and his son were driving from Chicago to Las Vegas, Nevada. There, Skinner was going to help a family member remodel her home. He and his son also planned to do some gambling. On the way, their GPS accidentally directed them toward Las Vegas, New Mexico instead. Within a few miles of crossing into the state, trouble began.
I'm going to pat you down for weapons and have the dog run around the vehicle, okay?
I'm doing about 5 miles over the speed limit. The state trooper, he sees us, so he pulls us over, and he asked me if he could search the car.
That search didn't turn up any weapons or drugs, but the police did discover something else. $17,000 Skinner and his son had in their luggage for their two-week trip.
This boy has $3,000 right here alone.
He says, what are you doing with all this money? I said, we're going to Vegas to help my sister put her house back together and have some fun. It's my son and I.
After 2.5 hours of aggressive questioning, the cops let the Skinners and their money go. But their ordeal was just beginning. Further down the road in Albuquerque, they were stopped again. This time, the local police, accompanied by federal agents.
They went immediately to the money.
Wait, so they took the $17,000?
They took the $17,000.
What crimes were you charged with?
We weren't charged with any crime. No crime at all.
So what reason did they give you for taking all your money if they weren't charging you with a crime?
They didn't give us a reason.
Skinner and his son were victims of a controversial law enforcement practice known as civil asset forfeiture. Under it, local police, often working in cooperation with federal authorities, can seize people's money and property simply based on the suspicion it might be tied to a crime. Since 2001, nationwide, police have taken more than $2.5 billion in cash from people who have never been charged with a crime.
I went to college here at New Mexico State University. And
Brad Cates is a prominent New Mexico attorney. We met him at his ranch in Las Cruces.
All of the protections we know in our Bill of Rights are abrogated by the very nature of asset forfeiture.
Most average folks aren't walking around with $20,000 or $25,000 or $30,000 cash.
First of all, most seizures are not $30,000. they're way lower than $30,000. Secondly, last I checked, it's legal to own money in America. And in order to take it, you're supposed to have a federal judge get a warrant.
Coming from Cates, some might find that strange. It was Kate, as a high-ranking Justice Department official under President Reagan in the 1980s, who helped establish the aggressive use of civil forfeiture.
Now there are 400 federal laws for which you can invoke asset forfeiture.
That was never your intention.
No.
Now, as a result of cases like the Skinners, New Mexico has become the first state to abolish civil forfeiture outright. Kate's helped state legislators write that law.
So that's rather ironic, isn't it? Now, that's just one state. Here's what you didn't hear in this. They're not only seizing cash, any amount. If you had $100 in your pocket, they can take it. But now they can take every nickel you have in the bank, from every card, a debit card, doesn't matter what you have, they can take it with this little machine. They can immediately tell them how much is in there, and they withdraw it all out for themselves. Now, she's wrong on her figures. Last year it was over $3 billion last year. Also, they're taking homes, they're taking businesses, they're even taking people's cars, lots of them. If you drive through the Carolinas, for example, and you have a car that someone likes, they can take it right there and do. You're left on the road with no car, no ticket. You've done nothing wrong. You're not cited for anything. And then when you say, why are you taking my car? This man wasn't told why they took his cash. But in one case, man says, well, anything we take it under the suspicion that somehow it was drug-related. All right? You're dealing with tens of thousands per year. And I can understand where people may think this is just an abstract existential problem may happen once in a while. No, this is daily all across the United States. So now, what are some of those other 400 rules that they can take your property? Let me give you an easy one. Let's just say that you're in a state where you're allowed to use legal marijuana, but someone is on your property and they raid your property and they find marijuana on that property, a single joint, they can confiscate your entire property. They can confiscate your apartment, your house, if any drugs are in it that are known to be illegal in that state. That's how severe it is. Unless it's happened to you, you can't appreciate it. Just like for all the Caucasians, for all the wealthy people, for all the professors, for the lawyers, doctors, engineers who are listening right now. We have many listening. You may not appreciate what it means to be a person of color living in New York City or any other city, walking down the street, minding your own business, and you're pulled over by a cop. They told you to empty your pockets. Why? Search. They're profiling you. They're profiling by how you're dressed, how you look. If you should have even a legal amount of marijuana in your pocket, once they say, show us your hands, show us what's in your pocket, you take it out. The moment it becomes public, they can then arrest you and you go to jail for 7 years. You can thank Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton for that, but also our entire private political system. Some of the biggest donors and some of the people behind Clinton's campaign, the private prison system. But if you're not one of those people being profiled, then it may not mean anything to you. Over 500,000 people were profiled in New York City last year alone. The President of the United States could stop it with executive order and has chosen not to. How many people have gone to jail because of the fraud, massive, rampant, epidemic fraud that occurred in the financial sector and through Wall Street and other lending institutions in 2007? How about none? Not one. How many people who knowingly approved drugs like Vioxx that were known in advance of their marketing to be dangerous and would cause lives, but were very profitable? Vioxx made $22 billion. They paid $5 billion in fines. That means they were left with $17 billion in profit. Crime pays. Who went to jail for manslaughter? When you kill 60,000 to 500,000 people with a single drug in a four-year period, someone should pay. No one. Whose charter was revoked? None. Which board of director was found guilty? None. Why aren't these things being discussed? Is this not important? It is important. Every 48 hours, enough Americans die that you could fill three jumbo jets every 48 hours from medical drugs. So why isn't it changing? If you know you're in and out, you're killing people, change what you're doing. They don't have to. They won't. There's no consequence. So what are your thoughts about this idea that your assets could be seized, you have no recourse, you can show up, but very few people do, especially when they're traveling, and they have to hire a lawyer, and you're going against the state, and the state can hire all the lawyers at once. They can keep these things in litigation for a long period of time. Why aren't these things being discussed? What should we do about it? That's our talkback question, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, I believe that the answer for a lot of our problems is knowing more about the people who are causing them. Because if you know that you've got a really seriously subversive person to the American ethic in your midst, best to become conscious of that. Hillary Clinton is now that presumptive president, and we better pay more attention. And Abby Martin, who I'm going to have on for an hour in a conversation with her about these issues next week, she has more to say about Hillary Clinton's legacy that most people today are completely unconscious of.
Just $10 million is the brutal theocratic kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Matching the $10 million is the Viktor Pinchuk Foundation, Ukrainian billionaire oligarch who pledged tens of millions more to the Clinton Global Initiative to, quote, modernize Ukraine while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Donating in the $1 to $5 million range are Gulf state monarchies Oman, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar and Kuwait, Saudi billionaire Nasir al-Rashid, ExxonMobil, Dow Chemical, Walmart, a company she has close ties to, having served on their board of directors from 1986 to 1992, Coca-Cola, Pfizer, Barclays Capital, Goldman Sachs, and Boeing, the number two defense contractor in the country. In the lower million-dollar range are such exemplary institutions as Monsanto, Chevron, General Electric, more banks, Bank of America, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, UBS, Bank of California, and media giant Fox's News Corp. Then there's the Soros Foundation, an organization that claims to build, quote, tolerant democracies around the world, whatever that means. It's a win-win relationship. One that only continues to grow. The Clintons get massive financial support to run their machine, and their contributors get the perks of a loyal advocate in a position of power. As Hillary ascends off of this corporate sponsorship, the more favors she can grant, leading to more contributions, and so on. And while Hillary was in the Senate, these favors for her donors were numerous. Manufacturing giant known as Corning gave hundreds of thousands to the Clintons through their foundation and speaking fees. In return, Hillary introduced Senate legislation to allot hundreds of millions in federal aid to purchase Corning products. Notorious criminal enterprises Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae were also Clinton Foundation sponsors who won big by investing in Senator Clinton. She played a key role in blocking measures to regulate them, helping them reap super profits before facilitating the crash of the economy. The deal was good for business while Hillary was in the Senate, but the plan was always something bigger. After checking the box of having experience and having built a robust financial backing and political network, Hillary announced her bid for president in 2006, shortly after her Senate re-election. She was supposed to be the shoo-in. It was her time, as they said. But then everything blew up in her face. Mass opposition to the Iraq War marginalized her as a candidate. A little-known Barack Obama was flung to the front for his rhetoric against the war, while Hillary ardently defended her vote for the war throughout her entire campaign. Knocked off a presumed ride to the White House, she flailed trying to capture a changing Democratic Party base. Her campaign was criticized for its slew of dirty tricks, including an array of voter suppression tactics mainly aimed at the youth. Most pathetic was the release of a photo of Obama in a turban, pandering to Islamophobia and the strategy of thinly veiled racism the Clintons employed back in the 90s. Obama's campaign manager, David Plouffe, said the photo was the most shameful, offensive fear-mongering we've seen from either party in this election. But none of the schemes worked. And while today Hillary's media surrogates continue to call on close competitor Bernie Sanders to drop out, back in 2008, she held out to the very bitter end, refusing to give in when Obama was the clear winner. She only acquiesced and backed Obama after a closed-door negotiation where she was promised a promotion and a path to succeed him. As Secretary of State, the rewards for her sponsors grew to a new level, and so too did donations to the Clintons. Her corruption is exemplified by the fact that 181 donors to the Clinton Foundation simultaneously lobbied the State Department while she was in charge. She used her position to divvy out repayment favors in a variety of ways. She funneled money from the State Department to Clinton friends and sponsors, like securing tens of millions in government grants for her dear friend and owner of for-profit education firm, Lorette Education, Inc. She also used her new title to help negotiate business deals between her donor friends and other heads of state. For example, she brought billionaire mining magnate Frank Giostra to meet the president of Colombia, scoring him access to pristine forests and coastline to be mined and drilled by his company. She did the same in Kazakhstan and beyond. Hillary convinced other countries to give up permits to be pillaged. In one incident, she convinced the Haitian government to issue a rare mining permit. The contract went out to a mining company that not only shells out millions to the Clinton Foundation, but her brother sits on its board of directors. She also flew around the world on the taxpayer's dime to act as a saleswoman for American corporations. For her sponsor Boeing, she made a personal pitch to the Russian government to purchase their jets. The result was a $3.7 billion contract for Boeing. The Clintons got a kickback of $900K as a giant thank you from the war profiteer. But none of these deals compare to her role as an international arms dealer. Her State Department approved a whopping $165 billion worth of commercial arms sales to 20 nations that are also Clinton Foundation sponsors, doubling U.S. arms sales to those countries under George W. Bush. These lucrative deals are undeniably rewards for paying off the Clintons. The amount of the reward directly corresponded to the amount of their donation. Her top donor, Saudi Arabia, scored the biggest, and so on down the line. Beyond the obvious step up from her corporate shilling as Senator and Secretary of State, wreaking economic and environmental havoc to line the pockets of Clinton coffers, a President Hillary puts us in great danger of catastrophic war, another fact she's proven time and again over the entirety of her career. Clinton's war record is perhaps most exemplified by her endorsement from one of the world's most notorious war criminals, the butcher of Cambodia, Henry Kissinger. On the campaign trail, she bragged, "I was very flattered when Henry Kissinger said I ran the State Department better than anybody had run it in a long time. So I have an idea about what it's going to take to make our government work more efficiently." Yes, the relationship between Kissinger and Clinton is very close. Not only did she consult with him regularly as Secretary of State, her and Bill frequently vacationed with the Kissingers. Her other foreign policy advisors are quite similar, including PNAC founder neoconservative Robert Kagan, and even shares advisors with Republican war hawks like Ted Cruz. Her support for the criminal invasion of Iraq has come back to haunt her once again in this election, and now she's written it off as a mistake, and in one instance seemed to blame it on being bribed by George Bush with state funds for New York.
So I'm sitting there in the Oval Office, and Bush says to me, "What do you need?" I said, "I need $20 billion to rebuild, yeah, you know, New York." He said, "You got it," and he was good to his word.
But she didn't just vote for the war. She was a key advocate of it, leading a right-wing minority among Democratic Party Congress members that favored the invasion over the old tactics of empire's domination. She called for, quote, unequivocal support for Bush's firm leadership and decisive action. She spread the lie that Iraq was in violation of UN resolutions, despite the actual weapons inspectors arguing the contrary, and continued to assert Iraq had WMDs despite it being, by that time, thoroughly debunked. As the U.S. and Iraqi body count grew and complete disaster ensued, Hillary still went around the country asserting that she had no regrets giving Bush total authority to invade and occupy Iraq. In 2007, she voted to give Bush the same authority again, with a blank check to attack Iran by trying to label their military a terrorist organization, a move rejected even by pro-war Democrats.
Today, Joe Lieberman, who authored the Iraq resolution, has offered another resolution, and it is essentially a fig leaf to let George Bush go to war with Iran. And I want to congratulate Biden for voting against it, Dodd for voting against it, and I'm ashamed of you, Hillary, for voting for it. You're not going to get another shot at this, because what's happened, if this war ensues, we invade and they're looking for an excuse to do it. And Obama was not even there to vote.
Senator Clinton, I want to give you a chance to respond.
In 2008, Senator Clinton made the chilling and completely repulsive admission that if president, she would not rule out using nuclear weapons on Afghanistan and Pakistan. After her promotion to Secretary of State, she boldly planted a flag in the Obama administration to establish the Hillary Doctrine. According to The Nation, 24 current and former administration officials, foreign diplomats, friends, and outside analysts described Mrs. Clinton as almost always the advocate of the most aggressive actions considered by Mr. Obama's national security team. Of course, she joined Obama in creating and leading terrible affronts to human life and rights, like the murderous drone campaign in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. The program's mass civilian casualties, she says, she takes with a grain of salt. However, on other issues, she took the lead, showing how she would steer the empire's ship as she aimed for the presidency. In her book, she brags about her lead role back in the 2009 coup of the democratically elected leader in Honduras, further plunging the country into violence and instability. Also that year, when it was long clear that the Afghanistan war was an endless, unwinnable crisis, she lobbied to send far more troops in Obama's blood-soaked troop surge. When it was time to keep the promise of bringing those troops home, then Secretary of Defense Robert Gates says that Hillary argued forcefully against withdrawing the surge troops. She continues to advocate a never-ending U.S. occupation there. The same thing happened when it came.
That's Abby Martin, just giving you more background on the true nature of what this woman has actually done. Now imagine if she's done this and gotten away with it, what she would probably do. I would predict that we would end up within the next 4 years of her becoming president, seeing Israel attack Iran. And you attack Iran, keep in mind, you could put Iraq in Iran several times over. It has a large population, more than almost three times the size of Iraq. And that would lead to a massive world in chaos. And she wouldn't bat an eye to do it. So just keep in mind, you're getting a whole lot that you don't understand if you're the average person when you vote for her. I would hope that Bernie Sanders today would meet with Jill Stein. I would hope that he looks at the numbers and realizes that as 41% of all Americans are keeping independent, and most of those independents would vote for him or Jill Stein, only a small percent would vote for Trump or Clinton, that if he ran on the Green Party ticket now, joining with Jill Stein, that he could win. But otherwise, I'm concerned that if he goes into a contested convention based upon how good the Clintons are at political fixing, and the superdelegates, many of whom are paid representatives and lobbyists for major corporations, they're not going to be deterred by how many young people show up on the street saying, you know, Bernie has got the rights on his side. They're going to say, too bad. And then you're going to, it'll be too late. So my hope is that we will see a different Bernie emerge. Chris Hedges doesn't believe so. Chris may be right. Chris may be right when he says that all that's going to happen is that at some point during the convention, Bernie will say, now it's time for us to unify and go forward. Anything's better than Trump, blah, blah, blah. Not true. Not true. A few other things. One of the things is the superbug. According to the latest research on this out of the World Health Organization, an estimated 8.2 million people die each year from cancer, and they're saying that antibiotic-resistant superbugs are going to kill more people. Right now in the United States, tens of thousands are dying. And what can we do about it? First of all, why are they dying? The people who are most susceptible to getting a superinfection are people who have very weakened or collapsed immune systems. And people with who've gotten chemotherapy, radiation treatment, people who are malnourished, And also people who've been consuming animal-based diet where you're getting a lot of the antibiotic in small amounts over a period of years, then that and those antibiotic end up destroying good bacteria in your gut, destroying the good biome, and as a result, bad bacteria proliferate. And that causes a whole disruption in your natural homeostasis or body chemistry. And that favors disease over wellness. So if you want to protect yourself against super bad bugs, just keep a super strong immune system. It's just that simple. The stronger the immune system, the better likely you are to overcome or prevent any illness. And the things that allow that are staying away from processed foods, refined carbohydrates, high fructose, alcohol, caffeine, tobacco, and eating a plant-based diet, exercising, and taking the supplements that protect you. Curcuminoids, curcumin, that's top of the list. Green tea, ginseng, vitamin C. These are all very powerful at keeping your immune system strong. And if you should get a bacteria, then look at olive leaf extract, peppermint oil, also oil of oregano. Very, very powerful. The Manuka honey, the highest grade Manuka honey, which I think is 500, the lowest being 5. If someone I knew had a super bug, I would apply, if it's on the skin, I would apply the Manuka honey. I would first spray the area with colloidal silver, then spray it with gold colloidal, then I would put Manuka honey on it. And then internally, I would take the same things, because you can kill these super bugs this way. And then give them high doses of vitamin A, aqua vitamin A, and vitamin C intravenous. There's no reason we should have all these people dying. We're out of time. No one called in, or I would have taken your calls on what to do about asset forfeiture. It's just one more of the steps they're taking towards abrogating your rights, your freedoms. And they shouldn't do that. We should be paying attention. These are important issues. By the time you finally get the idea that maybe you should pay attention to global warming, or maybe you look around the world and see that there's flooding in China today, the worst flooding in the history of France, the worst flooding in northern England, in Russia, in countries all over the world, in Australia in particular, they're getting really hit. And in Texas, 22 counties have had the worst flooding in their history. They're not prepared. We're not preparing for these. We're not preparing for the radical changes that are coming and are going to be the new norm. I hope that we wake up, become aware of what's important, and put that as a priority. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. And I look forward to seeing a lot of you on Sunday at 5th Avenue and 90th Street in Central Park, where we have our running and walking group. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. We have about 20 coaches that help people. No one's left behind. Doesn't matter what your condition. Just show up at 90th Street and 5th Avenue at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, and we'll get you into good shape. Been doing it. This is our 40th year. Have a nice day, everyone.
Let me hear the worshipers! Where's all of my praise? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together, because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.